Welcome to the In Awe podcast, where we amplify women and empower a community through the mission and their message. I am your host, Sarah Johnson, English teacher and school principal turned author and entrepreneur, living my own leap of faith on a mission to teach masses. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook at Sarah S. A. Johnson. Be sure to subscribe to the In Awe podcast so you can join me each week as I feature women who will leave us all in awe of their impact on our world. Hello, my friends, and welcome back to the In Awe podcast and our series feature, The Sponsor Spotlight. I have just really enjoyed all of these interviews, and if you have not caught any of them prior to this, please do so. It is a new feature in relation to the length of this podcast, which has been going for 5 years, where we have amplified the stories of women to empower community. And now the Sponsor Spotlight's purpose is to amplify the voices of those who lift up and sponsor women leaders and just really strive for systemic change in our society to create a more equitable and inclusive space. And I am just so deeply inspired and honored by the guests that we have today. I know that we unpack our story in terms of connection, and my friends, you are going to learn so much from this man. And I can't even. So let me just go ahead and introduce to you the guest for today. Tom Murray serves as the Director of Innovation for the Future Ready Schools Project of All for Ed, located in Washington, D.C. He has testified before the United States Congress and has worked alongside that body, the U.S. Senate, the White House, and the U.S. Department of Education, State Departments of Education, corporations, and school districts throughout the country to implement student-centered learning while helping to lead Future Ready Schools and Digital Learning Day. As ASCD best-selling author, Murray serves as a regular conference keynote, was named the 2018 National Global EdTech Leader of the Year by EdTech Digest, the 2017 Education Thought Leader of the Year, one of the 20 to Watch by NSBA in 2016, and the Education Policy Person of the Year by the Academy of Arts and Sciences in 2015. His best-selling book, Learning Transformed, 8 Keys to Designing Tomorrow's Schools Today, co-authored with Eric Scheninger and published by ASCD, was released in June of 2017. His most recent book, Personal Authentic, Designing Learning Experiences That Impact a Lifetime, was released in October of 2019. Prior to moving to his role in Washington, D.C., Tom served as an elementary teacher, middle school principal, elementary principal, and at the district level in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. He is most passionate about creating cultures of innovation where teachers are empowered to create the types of learning experiences today's modern learners need to thrive. In addition to his role at Future Ready Schools, Murray works directly with school and district leaders for administrative retreats, opening convocations, and professional learning days. Oh my goodness. My friends, I could go on and on and list all the pedigrees that Tom has collected in his life, but the truth is, the best part about him is his absolutely authentic, deep interest in people and growing himself and growing systems. And in this podcast, you can expect us to unpack our connection, which is really fun, and I won't spoil any of it here in the intro. But then you're going to hear a lot about his own personal journey, his passion to create more inclusive spaces, and his insights into this dimension of gender in leadership. But he also expands it for us too in this conversation, and I love it. I've listened to it several times myself already. I am really excited to share it with you. And I know that from these sponsorship spotlights, my hope is that you will just continue to grow your own thinking around this topic as I do. I also hope that you will share these episodes with your friends, with your family, with your social media network, because I think it's really important not only that we amplify the voices of women in our personal stories, but that we create the space where it normalizes the voices of those who are also creating space and making systemic change. So without further ado, it is my great honor to share with you my friend, Tom Murray, and his sponsorship spotlight story. Welcome, Tom Murray, to the In Awe podcast.
I am here. I have been waiting for this day for a long, long time. I am so, so excited to be joining you, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome, and thank you for joining me, because I know that you've got a big full life and you're jet setting all the time. You got all these really big titles. So for you to take space for me is such an honor. And I think you've been waiting for this for like years.
Literally 5 years. Yes. Yes. I've been waiting for it. And just like when you reached out, I said, this is the day that I have been waiting for legitimately 5 years. So yes, I am so excited to be here.
Oh my gosh. All right. So we're going to share with listeners. There's a little bit of a backstory you might be able to pick up. But before we do that, I read your bio ahead of time. So we know all the important critical details of your, professional life, but would you just give us like a current context? What are you up to? What's happening in Tom Murray's world right now?
Absolutely. So first and foremost, I'm a dad. I've got a 10-year-old in fourth grade, and that's my son, Caden. I've got an eighth grader going into high school next year. That's my daughter, Paisley, at 14. And so any of the work that I do, decisions that I try and make, I try to look at it through the eyes of what is it that I want for my own kids? What are the experiences, the access, the opportunities that I want for my own children? And then having the privilege and ability to be able to work nationally, if that's what I want and hope for my own kids, how would I help support the opportunities for every child, regardless of their zip code, to have similar opportunities? And so that's where some of my passion comes from. So in my day job, help to lead Future Ready Schools, bipartisan nonprofit, part of All for Ed, which is the bipartisan nonprofit out of Washington, D.C. I've been there since 2014, which is absolutely crazy. Got recruited to go to DC a number of years ago. And so with that, I get to work with school and district leaders. When you take a look at, we have frameworks and tools and resources. We don't sell anything. It's a nonprofit, which is a great space to be able to support the work that educators are doing from coast to coast in some of the bluest states and some of the reddest states to be able to do some of that work. And so there I'm the director of innovation. I get to have the microphone often related to content and webinars and in-person events and those kinds of things. And no matter where I go, there's amazing people working hard for kids. And so that's my priority. That's my day job. That's what I work. I have an incredible team. There's a whole policy side. And so sometimes get to work with Congress or the Senate or at the White House and those pieces. But that's not the piece that I enjoy the most. I enjoy being with people, and that's my leaders, whether they're leading in classrooms every day or superintendents that are veterans. And so with that though, they give me some flexibility and I get to use some vacation time to speak around the country and to do things like convocations and leadership retreats and all those different pieces there as well. And so what an honor it is to do that work and be an author and get to meet great people like you, Sarah J. So honored to be here. And that's kind of part of what's going on in my world. Keeps me busy, that's for sure.
I love it. I just can't stop beaming. I've gotten to know you in a way that just makes me so grateful for my own life, but also just knowing the ripple and the impact. I've watched people, come away from your sessions and changed. I've always grateful when people bring up your name in circles and just really love seeing the level of influence that you have in those titles, as well as just in the way that you move throughout the world. So I'm so
So
grateful.
you're not expecting this, and I'm going off script, and I'm going to turn the tables here for a moment because here we are on the In Awe podcast. And my friend, I'd like to say I appreciate those kind words, but I'm truly in awe of you. And for Sarah's listeners here, what I will say is she is truly one of the most authentic, vulnerable, humble, incredible, brilliant people on the planet. And I say that because she is the one that personally brings so many smiles to my day where I get the random text out of the blue, "Hey friend, thinking about you. Hope things are well. Hope the family's good." And just out of the blue, she's one of the most selfless people that you could ever meet. And so I know as listeners, you've heard her heart and her voice, but as a longtime friend of hers, I can speak honestly to she's the real deal. And so, Sarah, I'm in awe of you, my friend. Thanks for having me here.
Thank you so much. And it's so beautiful because I think now we got to get to our origin story because this one makes me smile and cringe a little bit. Tom, I told you in the pre-chat that I was going to share a detail that I hadn't shared with our connection that we first made. And so back in 2019, we looked it up to make sure that the date was accurate. I was a tag along with my friend Jessica Johnson to the ASCD Empower Conference, but specifically, she was going as an ASCD author. And we had just come off of we just did a keynote together at the Women Leading Wisconsin Conference. So we drove from that to Chicago. And I had just at that time a lot of imposter syndrome feelings. A huge part of that is I had left my principal position, and I've shared often on this podcast about the lack of worth that I was kind of still feeling because I had ripped that title off and I had to do a lot of healing to figure out my worth anymore outside of, an official title. And I had started this podcast in December of 2018. And so we met shortly after. It was, this in its infant stages, but I had an interview with a woman who is a shared connection. Her name is Rae Hewart. I had her almost early on the podcast. And she is an educator out of Ohio. She's with the Teach Better team. And I remember I had these kind of standard questions on the podcast. And I remember asking her who was one of her most influential people. And this is what she said, Thomas C. Murray. And at the time, I was like, this is what I haven't shared with you. In my head, I was like, oh, sure, the male again. Like, I'm trying to amplify women voices, and I'm hoping that this influential female will specifically mention a female in her life that has been a guide and a mentor for her. And I'm almost embarrassed to say out loud, it was almost a feeling of resentment that I felt that a person would mention white male who's in the front all the time. And I didn't know you. So, anyway, we're at this author event in Chicago, and I saw you sitting at a table. And, we share some people, you and I don't know if the world knows this, but you and Joe Sanfilippo and Jimmy Casas are kind of friends.
Never heard of those. And after that little story, by the way, I think it's time to wrap up this edition of the Get Off podcast. So thanks for having me, Sarah. What an honor it is to have been here. Have a good day, everyone.
This is so important. And I really thought about whether I should share that internal, but I'm sitting there having this internal conflict because first of all, I've already shared with you, like I'm sitting there at this author event. I'm not an ASCD author. I've got this imposter syndrome and I see you sitting across the room and I hear Ray Hewart's voice in my head saying, Thomas C. Murray. And she just had these really great things to say about you. And I knew that you're connected with Jimmy and Joe. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go introduce myself. I don't care if I feel like a nobody. I don't belong here, but I'm just going to go say hi. And so, like, that's a narrative, all of this stuff that I have reeling in my head. And I walk over and let's see from here. I introduce myself and I'm pretty sure I mentioned Joe and Jimmy, like that we're connected. And do you remember what you said to me when you asked what I do? And I have a podcast.
Oh, absolutely, I do. And I can picture it like it's yesterday. You were sitting to my right. I can picture the room. We were at a round table, and I remember saying something along the lines of, "Hey, if you ever want me on the podcast, I'd be glad to help." And just trying to offer support or just to be there. You'd share that you just launched it, and hey, I'm all in. Let's have a conversation. Let's go. And I definitely laughed at your response and remember it to this day as well.
Which was, oh, I actually amplify the voices of females.
I was like, "Yeah, well, you got me on that one. So, good luck with that podcast. And if I can ever support it, let me know." And 5 years later, the invite came through, which I responded, "I've been waiting for this for 5 years." So now, folks, you understand that very beginning. But I remember that day like it was yesterday, Sarah. And I will be honest, I am so grateful that you made your way over, came over, said hello, introduced yourself, because you've been an incredible friend since that day. And so thank you for doing that.
Well, I am too. And I gotta say that it was important for me to share those details in the internal conversation that I was having with myself because over the course of the last, 5 years that the podcast has been launching and amplifying women voices, there was always this tension that I was always feeling because I realized what started to occur was my shift in mindset. And a huge part of that is you, Tom, because I know why Ray mentioned Thomas C. Murray as a very influential person in her life. You are in mine, you're in many. And as I started to open my mind and my heart, I realized that it's not enough just to for me to amplify the voices of women on this podcast. And that's why this sponsorship spotlight has been simmering in my heart and my spirit for so long, and why it is so critical and important for me to have you on is because you shifted my world to realize that in striving for a greater sense of equity for women voices, for female leaders in our profession, we need the people in positions of authority, of privilege, perceived power, all of that to do exactly what you do, which is sponsor. We know that there are systems in place that we didn't create, that we exist in. And one of the things that I just deeply love and appreciate you about you is a sense of awareness that you have and a very intentional way that you move to make space and to support and to provide opportunities, which is exactly why you're here. And I'm so grateful every single day since I, met you and the experiences that we've had together and the way that I continue to learn from you. So thank you for being you and for shifting my own mindset on this whole
Awesome.
topic.
Well, I appreciate that. And a shout out to Ray. She's brilliant and an amazing educator, and the whole Teach Better team. That meant a lot. What I'll say, and just reflecting on those words, and no, I didn't know. I appreciate you sharing the first piece. That is funny, but here's the other piece is I get it, right? Because our world has been, especially from an ed leadership end or a speaker end or from conferences or, who's publishing or what, who gets a main stage. And who's the superintendent, right? Has been so male dominated. And as a white male, has been so white male dominated. And I'll be really vulnerable and say, I think for years I was blind to it. As I grew up, I grew up in a suburban two-parent home. My parents are still married to this day, middle-class America. We weren't wealthy, but I had everything that I needed as I went through school. The vast majority of teachers kind of looked like me in some way, some fashion, as the kids did around me in my AP classes. And I was really naive, privileged, and sheltered in a lot of ways. And I had a lot to learn. And I think then, as I entered the school system and wanted to serve kids and starting an elementary teacher and starting to realize there's a lot of things that I took for granted growing up, like, gee, homework. What's our thoughts on homework? Because when I went home, my mom was home and she worked as a piano teacher at home, but I had a safe place to do my homework, answer somebody questions, somebody that held me accountable. So I didn't really think twice about it. And it starts hitting me, wow, like some of these kids at 10 years old are going home to empty houses and taking care of siblings and don't have the support or the supplies. My parents would bring me to CVS those first weeks of school. We'd get whatever we needed. I never thought anything of it. Again, we weren't wealthy at all, but I had everything that I needed, that those nice clothes on that first day. And it really, really hit me how naive I was early on in my career, as I looked around and I just saw so many differences, so many different family structures, so many students living in poverty, so many students who had come to the United States that were walking into my classroom days after leaving their country, speaking no English. And it really hit me and was a very humbling moment to say, wow, I've been given so much through nothing that I've done personally. Didn't choose where I was born, didn't choose who I was, the family that I was born into. And I felt this moral and ethical obligation. Part of it's my faith. Part of it is just, who I strive to be, to realize there's such incredible vast differences in the people that we serve. How do we have empathy when we don't really understand what that is like? And we never can understand that that's like. Let me give you one quick example of where that was, and then we'll transition it to the female and gender conversation. I remember being a middle school principal. And a girl walked into my office, and it was part of my, it was toward one part of the year where I had to check in. Part of my job was to check in for people that didn't have they owed money in the cafeteria. And this girl comes walking in, and everybody knew who this one particular girl was. I'll just leave it at that. Everybody knew her in the building, right? And she comes into my office, and I said, "Hey, Liz, it's so good to see you, honey. Listen, I need to talk to you quick about the lunch debt that's over here." And her face starts to get red, and I can see the anger building, and she loses it. "Mr. Murray, what do you want me to do? I'm 14 years old. I can't go work. What do you want? I bring the form home to my mom. I don't have any money. What do you want me to?" And it hit me in that moment. I can picture where I was sitting, where I felt, and this was early in my administrative world as well. I have no idea what that feels like. Because when I've looked around in my world and I've never walked into, for instance, that cafeteria having a clue as to what it feels like of what if I get there and they say, "Honey, there's no money in your account." My biggest worry is like, can I get the ice cream or not? Right. So taking a look at that case there, like that's just one example of where my lens shifted, my mindset shifted, and I realized I've got one lens. I've got one set of experiences, and it doesn't devalue things that I've been through, traumas that I've been through. But everybody that I interact with comes from a different lens, different mindset, different experience, different faith, different family structures, different, people that they're in relationships with, and so on and so forth. That I've got to be really conscious of that. And I've got to also recognize how many legs up I've been given in this race of life through nothing that I've done personally, nothing that I was owed or earned. And so I've really had the moral and ethical desire internally for me to say, well, what can I do to support others? Now that I have a little girl who's 14 years old and I look at things such as females in STEM, it's something she loves. I don't want her walking into a classroom where it's 98% males. Why? Because I want her walking into a classroom where she can see herself. She feels included. She feels a part of that, and all those different pieces. So part of it, seeing it through her lens, the females in my life that I love because of their family and all those different other people, trying to see it through their lens. And also some strong female leaders that I've worked for as well have really helped me to shift my own thinking and my own lens to become that sponsor. I love the phrase that you use in that because I really believe that having a platform, as I recognize that I do, it's my job to help amplify voices.
I just love listening to you because I can hear that like true passion in your voice as you speak. And I know that anybody who's ever been able to be present with you knows that that passion raises up. And especially when I hear you talk about, I really appreciate that shift in your mindset. And you really have kind of existed and led in a space where you were able to grow your thinking, and why having you on the podcast is helpful, because I know that not everybody has led and had that opportunity just right in front of them, right? Because we, around our world, we still have a lack of exposure to even stimulate that whole journey that you've been on. Can we peel apart a little bit, like, your experiences and having female leaders above you? Because one of the things that, we do know is that the percentages of female leaders at the executive levels is still 25%. But you shared with me that you think it was around 50-50 and maybe even a higher percentage of females that you've reported to.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was trying to calculate because I've had many strong female leaders in my world, which definitely have helped shift the way I've done things, have taught me a lot. Love to share a story there, at least about one of them. And I would add on to what you just shared in terms of percentages. When we also then look at female leaders of color, it's minuscule in terms of percentages. And so when you look at how many female students of color we have across our nation, and then you compare it to those that have the, say, the superintendent seat or even the principal seat, and the numbers are out of whack. And so recognizing, how can I help amplify voices of other people? How can I help and give them support, mentorship, or not, and how can I learn from them as well? This isn't a one-way street by any means, but what can I do to support them or be a reference for them or help coach them through things along the way? I don't want to pretend by any means that it's just me supporting or it's some sort of something I'm doing just to that savior syndrome by any means. And so, yeah, I'd love to share a female superintendent that I had. Recently I had the privilege. I was in front of about 60 district teams, and I start sharing a story purposefully about somebody that had made a difference in my world, that I legitimately would not be doing what I'm doing today if it wasn't for her. She was the one that called and offered me my very first principal job after I had been turned down for a previous one in a nearby district. She was the one that gave me that opportunity. She was the kind of leader that had ridiculously high expectations. And I know if I screwed it up, she was going to kick me in the butt. But I will tell you what, she let us think differently. She was so incredibly innovative. She was a leader that was talking about home access for kids in 2006. She was a leader. We went fully competency-based by 2009. We created our own virtual school that I then had the privilege of leading as part of that, with taught by our teachers in 2010. Right. And so I take no credit for that. I said, this is a leader that had, it's one of the most visionary people I've ever worked with in my world, because she would say, if this is what we need to do for kids, if we're missing opportunities, how do we increase opportunities? How do we increase access for every child? And when you have a leader talking about home access for students that don't have it 18 years ago before COVID, you've got somebody that has a clue as to what they're doing. And I learned so much. So I was an elementary principal for a while, loved that role, cried like a baby the day that I left. But she walked into, it was the end of the year meeting, and people, just to tell it like it is, and she would know this, and if she's listened to this podcast, she knows this, people either loved her or didn't love her so much. I'll put it one way, because she was that strong voice, right? And so she came in after our admin staffing, and the year was over, and it was kind of that right before July 4th, and she said, Tom, I'd love to see you in my office real quick. And the funny part is, one of my colleagues reached over and was like, hey, it was great working with you, man. Like, good luck in the future, right? So she sat me down and she said, Tom, I've got a growth opportunity for you. I would love for you to come to district office, be the director of technology and the principal of a new virtual program that we're leading K-12, have both positions. And I have to be honest, my gut was, I love doing what I'm doing. And she's like, well, take a couple of days, take the rest of the week, think about it, and then get back to me by Friday. I said, all right, no problem. Let me give it some thought. And again, I love my building, love my staff. We were a great place. Things were moving well. And so I see her literally the next day, and she's like, hey, come here. Did you decide yet? You coming? And I was like, I thought I said a couple of days. She's like, sit back down. Here's what I want to share. And she looked at me and said, so Tom, here's the deal I'm willing to make. If you can come to me and say, this is why it's good for kids, and this is how it's in the budget, I will never tell you no. And I will tell you, there was a reason our district was on the map under her leadership. And so I then turned the position. I left the building that I absolutely loved, that was home for me, went to district office. 2 years later, we get featured on Digital Learning Day because of something that she had done. And today, Digital Learning Day is something that I now lead because of opportunities that a female leader provided for me open doors for me. If she didn't see stuff in me and give me opportunities and build capacity in me, I wouldn't be working out of DC. I wouldn't be helping to lead Future Ready Schools. I would not be doing Digital Learning Day and all the opportunities that I have. And so I share all of that story to say the only reason that I have the opportunities to nationally do what I do is because I have a female leader that saw something in me and gave opportunities to me. So the last thing that I can do is be selfish and not give back and return the favor and open doors for others and spotlight females and amplify the voices of females. Because I had a really strong, incredible female leader. And I shared all that story because when I was sharing that in front of 60 district leadership teams a few weeks ago in New York City, I was walking over to the room and I was able, at the end of sharing all of that stuff, say, and she's sitting right here. So she now works and she's going to retire for a second time. She's going to retire now. She works for an ed tech company just as kind of that superintendent advisor. And she had the tears flowing, gave me a big hug afterwards and said, "Don't worry, it's not going in your evaluation there, Tom. I'm not putting in your evaluation." And so I share all that because she's a strong woman leader that has also faced things in life that I never have. She's faced things in board meetings with male board members and community members that look at her and think she's weaker because she's female, or would say things to her that would never ever say things to me as a male. And to be real and vulnerable again, it took me a long time in life to realize that and to come to the conclusion that there's things that I don't think twice about. I think I became pretty aware, in college or even in high school of like walking down a street at 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm not necessarily looking over my shoulder, but all my female friends looked at those interactions differently. So I think those things I became aware of. But when it comes to the world of work and opportunities and jobs and positions and conferences and, being leaders in leadership positions, it's a different world. And so part of it is this kind of moral obligation I feel because I was put in positions of opportunity because of strong female leaders. And I recognize that.
I love that. I don't often get super outwardly emotional, but just picturing her in that moment and having, I'm sure it just was so beautiful to see you in that space, knowing that she had that influence, but then also for you to be able to honor her in that and then to reshare it here on the podcast. I just feel like that's what this life is about. Just recognizing the impact that we all have on one another. This is so beautiful.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
And I heard you say that, there were things that she had to face, even when you said describing that moment and thinking about the fact that people either loved her or didn't. I think that a lot of leaders face that, but females in particular, and I would say females that have identities that intersect even further, as you were talking about with diversity, experience that to a greater extreme because of those social penalties that we have based on stereotype bias. And I just really appreciate that you kind of share like this, these eyes opening for you because they open for all of us at different increments.
Another quick example I'll share on that, that I think our listeners can maybe even relate to on one level or the other. I get to, you shared earlier about just kind of jet setting, and I get to speak at so many different events and do convocations and do all this stuff and so many flights and all these opportunities. And I only share that because I had a conversation another time with another female leader, and that was doing a bunch of those. And we were standing together, and somebody had asked that individual and said to her, "Oh, wow, like that's got to be a lot for your family. How are your kids okay?" And what hit me is nobody's ever looked at me and said, "Wow, Tom, are your kids okay?" And just recognizing the judgments people make as a mother that's traveling and missing certain things versus as a father, it's like socially acceptable. Like, well, Tom's providing for his family. Tom's doing this for his kids. And not feeling the judgment that some of my female colleagues or friends, or maybe you've even felt, Sarah, where people kind of judge of like, wow, how, what about the kids? If you're out in another state speaking multiple days, like, are your kids okay? And on that, on my end, I don't get that, right? And so that hit me in that moment of, wow, like she just got asked something that nobody's, I mean, certainly people have asked, like, is it hard being away from your family? But I don't think there was a judgment of almost being this poor parent in somebody's mind because I was missing certain things. And so it's just another moment that's really just helped me recenter myself on some of the things that female leaders face that I just have had the privilege of not having to face. And so hopefully being able to support that.
That actually, I appreciate you sharing that because I actually experienced that last week.
There you go. There you
and
go.
I wasn't even like on a flight. It was just such an interesting, I was talking about the evolution of my career and just how grateful I am to do the work that I'm doing. And the response was, well, it's gotta be really hard on your kids when you do travel, even if it's just once, you know, a week or a couple times a month. And that is a shame trigger. It also, I will say, because I probably never said this on the podcast, as a female leader at the secondary level, we had a group, I've mentioned this group, the Wise Women, Women in Secondary Ed. And we talk about all the time that we would get that at sporting event supervision as high school principals. People would say, well, you know, where are your kids? Or they would ask us those things while we're doing our jobs. Those are just their little like implicit bias pieces that eventually just kind of wear at you a little bit in regard to how you respond to that, because there's just so much internal guilt that we carry as mothers anyway. Right. And then it's just like kind of thrown in our faces. So I appreciate you seeing that and highlighting that as an example.
Absolutely.
You know, I was thinking about the fact that you do have such a wide range of interactions because of the reach that you have. And I think about one of the reasons that I was so excited to get to know you and see what you're doing is that you share how you amplify voices. And do you want to share just a little bit about the various like podcasts and the leadership videos that you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, for me, I think it's looking at it, and I want to make sure that the first thing I say is I am in no way like have arrived when it comes to making sure I'm amplifying voices. It's nothing that I think I ever perfect. It's always a work in progress. There's always something to learn. So just, I guess, a few things that were kind of practical tips for any, especially for any male colleagues that are listening to this that may have a platform. So let me give you a variety of different pieces, because I don't, in my opinion, think it's just kind of one way. I think there's so many ways we have to just be, I think the word would be intentional about doing it, like pausing, looking around and saying, okay, where can I amplify other voices? And so first, as an author, I'll take my last book, Personal Authentic. You know, there's so many pieces of Personal and Authentic that are from the heart, my personal story. If anybody's read that opening chapter, you know, the tears are flowing. It's this kind of this trauma of trilling to helping understand how my mindset shifted and all these pieces. But throughout Personal and Authentic, there's over 100, and I wouldn't just say female, it's diverse voices as well, whether that's diversity in race or faith, you know, gender, you know, making sure that it's not just my lens. I certainly had the opportunity to write a book from start to finish with just Tom Murray's name in it. But what a less of a book and less quality that would lower quality, excuse me, that would be if it was just my voice, just my lens. I have one experience and it doesn't make it right. It also doesn't make it wrong. It doesn't mean I need to feel guilty about what I've been able to go through in life. However, I look at it as a personal obligation. And so with that, leveraging diverse voices, one of the things that I have all the way throughout the book is these things called make it stick. And they're on these little sticky notes throughout the book. There's about 100 of them to amplify other voices. Because when I would write a section, I would reach out to somebody and say, hey, when I'm thinking about this section, you popped into my mind as somebody I think does it well. Can you give me a really practical idea or two or three that I'd be able to share in the book to credit to you and put your name in there on a make it stick, so people have really practical ideas and ways to do it? And so, you know, when I think about opportunities, you'll see a lot of female voices throughout there. Also, there's multiple sections that were co-written. I wrote a section on equity and the importance of equity, but I recognize when I talk about equity, when it comes to race and those pieces, I'm not the author there. That is not my story to tell. And so I reached out to two of my close friends, Ken Shelton, one of my best friends in the world, lives in California, black male, taught in LAUSD, very different life experiences. He and I are actually presenting together on Monday, right? And so reached out to him, and then also reached out to Dr. Rosa Perez Isaiah when I wrote about cultural relevance and awareness, because again, that's not my story to tell as a white male, because I don't have a real understanding. I can read about it. I can try and understand it, but I never really get it. Rosa was somebody who came to the country. She was did not speak English early on, so she needed to learn English growing up in poverty. And part of the story she shares openly. And so she shared her story as part of that. And I'm going to give all that credit, support them, and thank them and recognize them for those pieces. But to amplify the voice, to recognize she's the one that needs to be talking about that, not me. And so it's something, if I need to address, how do I amplify the voices of others? So anybody that's an author, there's one easy way to do it, because it's only going to make it better and more practical. Another piece is I've been really intentional, to be honest. I've been slacking in the last like year and a half with these, but I created these leadership minutes, and it's literally meant to be 1 minute, one minute and 30 seconds to amplify somebody's voice around a great idea or something that they're passionate about. And so taking a look and saying, you know, And I could think of just so many different individuals, so many different people. Well, I just shared one out the other day, a Monica Burns or a Jessica Cabine, you know, folks that are just these amazing, incredible leaders. Rosa has done them, many others as well. And leveraging their passion areas and their expertise of areas that maybe I'm not so well versed in, but essentially it gives them a platform for a minute or a minute and a half. I'm leveraging my platform to be able to share their voice, tagging them so other people, hey, make sure to be following this person, check out some of their work. I love their work here, just to amplify the opportunities. And so those get lots of views, have lots of opportunities and sharing those out. That's certainly another way as well. Another thing, as somebody that does get to do so many different conferences and convocations and events, you mentioned Jimmy and Joe, and they're certainly my boys, and they're certainly incredible in what they do, and we do a lot of work together. But I also love to engage in the conversation, and I'll be real, sometimes I need to do a better job of this when I leave. Not going to say it's this perfect job by any means, but we'll also ask them, because again, it's not just female when I talk to them about it. It's also about making sure that they don't have, you know, five white males in a row doing their convocation. yeah. So diverse speakers, but also some strong female speakers. When I think of yourself being one, or a Jill Seiler, or a Beth Huff, a Jessica Bean, people that crush it on the stage and have such amazing messages like you do, you know, to be able to bring that up, and the importance of just amplifying their voice and being able to say, hey, here's somebody you should really consider being able to do that, I think is really another way as well. To me, it comes down to being intentional about it. You know, I also have my own podcast through Future Ready Schools, and we just launched that again just a number of weeks ago. And so for me, and again, Future Ready is really an equity focused, All for Ed's an equity focused organization. So for me, if I have 12 episodes of 12 white dudes, that is not going to go over so well. And let's be real, like, I'd be the first person that needs to call myself out with that. So I also can't have, hey, it's a leadership podcast, superintendents, principals, and whatnot. So if I have 12 dudes coming up, even if they're diverse dudes coming up, like, yeah, somebody's going to be calling that out. And guess what? Rightfully so. And so one of the strategies that I will use, to be honest with you, is how do I grow my own network? And so I will reach out to strong female leaders of color and say, and I'm actually recording one this afternoon with a lady that I've never met before, but came through a recommendation of somebody that I believe you know, Zandra Jo Galvan, saying, and her organization in California, CALSA, saying, hey, here's a really great, strong female leader that is really equity focused. I had no idea who she is. And so with that, and by the way, her name out in California is far greater than my name ever is. And so taking an opportunity to say, hey, I'd love to amplify your voice, amplify the work that you're leading, take the Future Ready platform, talk about some equity focused ways that leaders can support their students to help increase achievement. And so you have to be intentional. It reminds me of this, and then I'll stop talking here. I get fired up, Sarah, if you don't know, obviously, right? So it kind of reminds me of, for those folks that are listening, in a school district with HR during interviewing, and they'll say, you know, well, I didn't have any diverse candidates ever apply for my elementary school. Well, I didn't hire them because nobody ever applied. Like, that's one way to look at that. And by the way, as lovingly as I can, what a loser mentality that is. Why? Mm. Here, let's flip that. Well, how were you intentional to work with colleges that have high percentages of educators of color? How are you intentional about making sure that we're marketing in areas and ways that's going to bring in a diverse set of candidates? Because if all it is the way we've always done it, well, yeah, you're going to get the same exact results because our structures are built and getting the perfect results for the way that they're designed, right? So with that, we need to be intentional, whether we're talking candidates, whether we're talking being an author, being at a conference, just on social media to amplify voices. If we expect it to just come to us, it's not going to happen. We get the exact same results, and we'll continue to get this very male-dominated structure industry from a leadership piece on up. Flip side being, when we're intentional about it, we can amplify voices. It grows our own network, which becomes more diverse, which then gives the opportunity to amplify the voices of incredible people like Sarah J, given the opportunity to do that, like those folks that I've mentioned there earlier as well. To me, it only happens when we're intentional about it.
So true. And I'm really loving just listening to you, because I know that that's been an important focus for me that has fallen away a little bit more in the spaces that I am. And I can use excuses, but I was always so careful and intentional about reaching out and growing my own network because of the same exact thing that you're talking about, because I want to not only amplify the voices of women, but I want to amplify voices of, you know, historically underrepresented women. And as you were talking, I just felt this, you know, like tightness in my chest. Cause I remember having a conversation with my virtual assistant about this. And then since I lost her, I've really struggled trying to keep myself accountable to those practices. So you're just inspiring me right now again to remember to, you know, launch my net out further and be more, cause I've, you know what, in the heydays of doing that with intention for myself, have grown and felt so much richer in the conversations to just push myself. And I think that's important that we all do that.
And Sarah, it's also just real quick comment. It's also human nature. We're very comfortable with things that are like us. That's the way the brain is wired.
Right.
We're also very comfortable with our own circles. That's why we have them. And our own circles are not a bad thing by any means. Mm-hmm. But when we're intentional to reach out to people in our circle who have different circles than us in a variety of different ways to say, hey, who's somebody great? Who's a voice to help support, whatever that might be, you get such a far better result as opposed mm-hmm. to the same thing every time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 100% agree with that. So thank you for just, you know, kind of bringing that up to the surface too, in your example. Hey, we're coming to the end of our interview. And I was thinking it would be a really beautiful way to end this is one of the things that I just absolutely, I'm going to say this, I just love about you is how careful you are, even in the midst of this very full purposed professional life, about building memories and moments with both of your children. But specifically, one of the things that I notice is how careful you are about how you even post about your daughter. And so I just felt like that would be a tender way to end this. And just to talk a little bit about her, you know, opportunities. And I want to highlight one thing that you do as a dad to, you know, you can, but one of the things that you do as a dad to just cement these beautiful memories in the midst of these growing years. Do you want to talk a little bit about your daughter and your focus on helping
sure.
her?
And I know our time is tight and I can talk for the next 6 hours, but no one knows. Right. You know, and I mentioned very first and foremost, my key in the lens that I try to utilize most is being a father, right? I think to me, well, I know for me, the legacy I want to leave to my own children is far greater. I would give up every aspect of everything, education and any part of my career tomorrow, if it meant whatever I needed to do for my own children. And I think sometimes it's so easy to get out of whack. And I'll say that's easy for me to say. It's not something I've always modeled. And I've had to have that come full circle. My daughter Paisley is just an amazing, amazing individual. She is one with such incredible empathy and love. And part of it's because of the journey that she's been through. If I had lots more time, I could really dive into a 4.5-year journey because of food allergy struggles and things that she'd been through. And one of the things I wrote about in Personal Authentic, and with her permission, and I share it, things like convocations with her permission, is around what I've called the hidden stories within. And I share Paisley's journey over a long period of time. And I actually do it, and I'll give the quick analogy. I put this data on the screen. Let's pretend you're getting this female student tomorrow. In the last 14 months, she's been absent 35 times. She's been tardy 20 times. I need you to be totally real. What judgments might we make? And I'm sharing this because of how quickly we can judge. And so I've asked tens of thousands of educators to that. And it's, you know, kids lazy, parents don't care, parents are a mess, parents don't value what we do, kids going to be an issue, kids going to be behind, opportunity gaps, access gaps, all these pieces, you know, this kid's gonna be a lot of work for me, this kid's going to be a hassle, all that stuff. And then I share, let me tell you part of the story, it's my daughter. And the room goes silent. And of course I have to joke, like, parents are a mess, like, thanks for looking at it, I appreciate you, right? Kind of lighten the moment. But then I tell the why. And I share how what it was like for every single one of those 35 absences being 2 hours from our home and my daughter being the very first child in the Northeast to undergo a new food allergy therapy called OIT for sesame. And then I joke, well, 19 of the 20 tardies, one of them, we were just late, sorry, like it works out of it. But in 19, what it was like to start our therapy at 7 o'clock in the morning and then what it was like to drive back to school. And I was so grateful for Mrs. Thomas, her second grade teacher, and Mr. Moyer, her third grade teacher, because when she would walk back into the building, it was never, ever, Paisley, here's the five things you missed again this Monday. Mm-hmm. It was just, we're so glad you're here. And so I really elaborate and share on that full story. But the reason I share that is if I reframe the story like this, you know, what if I told you that on every one of those 35 absences, we were 2 hours from home, and 19 of those 20 hours, we were 2 hours from home. She drove 10,000 miles. She didn't want to. She drove 180 hours in a car. She didn't want to, you know, and what if I shared that in every single one of those days, plus every day that school was closed, that the office was open, she would say, mommy or daddy, I really wish I could be in school today. Mm. And because of that journey, she now eats the equivalent. We had almost lost her 3 times. Due to cross-contamination levels of sesame, less than one seed, We'd almost lost her three times. She now eats the equivalent of 2,000 seeds of sesame every single day. She can completely free eat. I share
Dude.
all that in her journey because we make these judgments based on the data, which we all do, just like we do sometimes with male and female, just like we do sometimes with race, just like we do sometimes with faith, all these different pieces. But one of the things that I share in Personal Authentic that I'll end on is the difference between making a judgment and having empathy is understanding the story. So how do we get to know the stories of our people? How do we get to those, for the gentlemen that are listening, how do we get to know the stories of our female colleagues who have stories that are incredible, who are brilliant, who are just leading the way in all the different pieces? How do we get to know the stories better so that we can work alongside them better, serve them better, support them better, and just overall support kids better as well? And so whether we're talking about kids in the classroom or a colleague down the hall, how do we get to know the stories of people? Our brain is wired to judge. That is a very natural thing. What we do with it can become the negative. See, that difference between making a judgment and having empathy is understanding the story. And so for me, I'm very much into vulnerability and humility and empathy. I'll never stand on a stage and tell people how well I did something, but I'll tell people how I messed it up. And the reason I share that is I think it's important as leaders to step back and recognize you're human first. It's okay to make mistakes, but we got to learn from them, change our behaviors, change our lens when needed so that we can support people better. And so, Sarah, I'm still on that journey. I am still learning and growing. I appreciate your platform to amplify my voice. That means so much to me. Appreciate all that work. And my friend, much love to you and to your family.
Well, the same to you. And I feel like that's such a perfect way to circle us back because, as you noted, and I shared, I had judgment around you. And when I got to know your story, it's been such an absolute joy to welcome that relationship into my life and to just grow from it constantly. And even just listening to you, I got caught up in a minute and had a hard time kind of getting back to the interviewee role because you do have a gift, and your voice has been elevated. I know you're a person of deep faith. You have been there alongside me in spaces that have, just even sharing a song or something here over the course of the last several years that has really helped fortify me. And so clearly your voice is meant to be heard and you are just such a gift. So I appreciate you. Listeners, of course, if you had never heard of Tom Murray before this interview, what an awesome experience that you got to be exposed. The best part is that he is in so many different spaces. So I will link all of the ways that people can get in touch with your work and your messages. Is there a specific platform that you like to engage best? I know you're on all of them.
I would say it's changing. I mean, I guess the best, if people head over to my website, thomascmurray.com, you can see links to Thomas C. Murray on X or Twitter. I always call it Twitter, but Instagram, Thomas C. Murray EDU, Facebook, Thomas C. Murray EDU. Would love to stay connected. Also, I'd love to, as you listen to this, feel free to reach out, share thoughts, push back in any way. Often I want to be able to learn there as well, but would love to stay connected.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I am always inspired by you and so grateful that you would share your message today, my wonderful friend.
I appreciate you. Thanks for having me.
I continue to be completely awe-inspired by every single guest on this podcast, and I am so grateful every time you choose to share, rate, review an episode. It matters so greatly to the mission and the message of our guests, and I appreciate every time you help one another rise by lifting up the message. Thank you so much, and I appreciate you being a part of this awe-inspiring community.